And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Hello everyone, this is From the Rookery End, a Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic, and I am Adam Leventhal, back once again, the Watford correspondent for The Athletic, and alongside me this week is Mike Parkin. How are you, Mike?
Come on, you Horns. I got it all out of my system on Saturday after the Newcastle game. There's no way they'll ever play that badly again. I am ready to rock and roll, my friend. Come on, you Horns.
I like that. And Dave is here as well. Dave, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm very good. Bit more optimistic than I was probably the last time you heard me. We'll get into that later. But I'm gonna throw something to you guys first off, just to get us going, to get us warmed up. Right, we've had a question from listener Jamie Parkin. I don't know if that's a relation, Mike. Probably is.
Isn't he Jamie Parkins? So he's what's worse than a Parkin? A Parkins.
He says, which player, past or present, is best suited to being the next 007?
Oh, what, easy.
Oh, go on there, Mike.
Marco Cassetti.
Oh, yeah.
You think, though, that Bond doesn't have a beard, does he?
The next Bond does, because it's Marco Cassetti.
Okay. I can see where you're going with that, with the suaveness.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I'm having him.
That's a tough one. Hang on a minute. Some past or present?
Well, I'll tell you what, while you're thinking, I'll give you a good Watford ex-player baddie. He just looks the part. Sebastian Prödl, I think, would be an amazing Bond baddie. Sort of
a good henchman.
Some sort of, yeah, and an amazing tailored suit with some sort of quite exotic pet either on his lap or on a diamond-encrusted lead walking around. I think Sebastian Prödl would be an amazing baddie.
That's a good shout on Prödl. He was in London this week, I think.
Filming Sebastian the new Bond. Prödl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll give you someone. Maybe he's maybe a touch on the shorter side, so maybe that might not tick everyone's boxes. But due to the fact that he's linguistically gifted, he can look sharp. He moves in mysterious ways often. I will give you Alman Abdi.
Interesting.
He's sort of in the Daniel Craig envelope. He's kind of he's like a shorter, less tough version of Daniel Craig. But I think actually, having thought about it, there's only one answer, isn't it?
Yeah. I think we've arrived at the same place at the same time.
The name's Bond, Jonathan Bond.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's doing very, very well at the moment out in the States as a double agent.
He could be doing battle with all Watford former goalkeepers, so that, you know, dastardly Aurelio Gomez sort of in his Brazilian lair in a volcano or something.
And then the madcap Tony Cotton just sort of crashing cars in the background.
Yeah, and Espen Bardsson just running around with his rifles or whatever he used to.
Probably and then best Ben league. Foster filming it all. Yeah. That's an interesting start. Okay, so we've sorted
no space for Eddie Plumley, though.
No.
Gary Plumley, sorry.
Well, he'd be serving the martinis.
Amazing. What a cast. We might be onto something here.
Just to let you know what else is going to be happening on this podcast. We're going to be pulling apart some of the news stories over the past week.
More Bond.
Yeah, I know. That might actually be more enjoyable if we stick to that. But just to let you know how we're going to be doing it. Yeah, Leeds, the international break coming up, talking about Xisco Munoz, some of the selection issues, and then we will be getting the Leeds view a little bit later on in the show. So let's start with the latest article which dropped on The Athletic this morning, and it is basically focusing on the elephant in the room. Everyone's thinking it. Everyone's maybe talking about it. Some people will have slightly different views on it, I think, and that is people are wondering if Watford lose against Leeds at Elland Road, what is going to happen to Xisco Muñoz. And what I tried to do is, you know, for people outside the Watford bubble, but also for people inside that might have alternative views, to just try and weigh up some of the thinking about how, you know, the hierarchy at Watford, you know, might be viewing the situation, whether they're right to be thinking like that, what they might draw upon, you know, the history, recent experiences, past experiences, trying to contextualize some of the results that we've had, maybe some of the tactical failings, maybe trying to bring into the fact that there has been a lot of change at the football club, and then just trying to work out where it all sort of boils down to in the end. Mike, Dave, you know, what's your sort of feeling on the situation at the moment? And is it fair to even be talking about it at the moment?
I think it is fair. And I've seen a lot of people, Watford supporters including, suggesting that it's entitled to suggest that Xisco Muñoz might be in line for perhaps a difficult couple of weeks. And I don't think that's the case. I think the reality is that we've seen, as you outline in the piece, we have seen Gino Pozzo be very, very decisive when it comes to changing the head coach. So us talking about him being removed or replaced isn't saying that we want it, isn't saying that it should happen, isn't saying it's right, isn't saying it's wrong. It's recognising that it's the chance, there's a high chance of it, because it's happened again and again in the past. So I think it's important to put that caveat around the whole conversation. We're having it because it's happened a lot. Now, you'd have heard after the Newcastle game, I was pretty downbeat. I was pretty despondent about the performance, and I've bent both your ears about it, and I bet everyone listening to the podcast ears about it. But the biggest issue I had with that game is that we looked incredibly disorganised against a team who is in absolute disarray on and off the pitch, and we just didn't look able to carry the fight to Newcastle, and we didn't look like we had a game plan, we didn't look like we had an approach, we didn't look like we had an identity, which we've talked about previously on the podcast. And I think that is a big issue for Xisco Muñoz against the backdrop of what we've already established, that head coaches are basically on thin ice from the first time they walk into Vicarage Road. I think you have to at least have a team looking like it's the part. And for me, they didn't look anything like it on Saturday. And therefore, I think it's only right and sensible that we have to have the conversation.
And Mike, I completely understand what you're saying. But I chose to watch the extended highlights of the Newcastle game before doing the podcast. And when you look at it, there were occasions, obviously, where Watford were being unnecessarily pulled apart, and a lot of it centered on individual errors, like just simple things like picking up Sean Longstaff on the edge of the penalty box. He had two warning shots before actually scoring the goal, which I found a little bit worrying. It seemed to stick out like a sore thumb to me. Obviously, there was the mistake from Ben Foster, and for anyone that says, "Oh yeah, you know, it was a good effort," and all that sort of stuff, as I mentioned in the piece that I did after the game, you just need to look at the reaction of Ben Foster. He wouldn't have been punching the floor if he thought that he'd done his best. You know, he'd performed to his best. And then later on in the game, that second half, the latter part of that second half, it basically just turned into a basketball match, which we've seen for other games as well, like the Brentford against Liverpool game, for example. It was just sort of end-to-end, just very little in midfield. Dave, from your point of view, I mean, I mentioned it in the piece that we don't get a running commentary from the Watford hierarchy about, oh yeah, no, Xisco's doing okay and things like that. But there have been a little bit of a glimpse. There's been a little bit of a glimpse from Cristiano Giaretta, the sporting director, just talking on social media and saying things like, you know, it's not enough. We must grow up quickly, guys, because we know how to do better. And he was very disappointed after the Stoke game. Do you sense that they are now feeling, oh yeah, we're sort of getting to the moment where he needs to deliver a really, really strong performance, a cohesive performance? Because that's something that he has mentioned himself, Xisco Muñoz, that we haven't been able to string together a decent performance from minute 1 to 90, have we?
Well, the last sporting director went on record with you, Adam, saying that basically it's only Gino's decision that counts at the end of the day. So if that's still the case, it doesn't matter how many tweets Cristiano Giaretta sends out. If Gino decides it's time, then it's time. I don't think we're there yet. I really don't. I mean, I think, Mike, you're completely correct to say all the things that you said in terms of we're right to be sort of alive to the prospect that it could turn at any moment, and a battering at Leeds, you know, an abject performance at Leeds could be the thing that turns it. But also you'd like to think that it's not solely just the performances. Maybe they're the most important thing. The performances and the results are the most important things, but also it's the, you know, the stuff that Gino sees at the training ground, and it's the relationships and the atmosphere and the conversations that he's having with Cisco that would leave him to, you know, decide that maybe, you know, I've either got confidence in this man or not. As I said, I don't feel that we're quite there yet. It doesn't feel to me as desperate as it was under Kike the second time round. It doesn't feel to me as alarming as it was, you know, in the early day, in the Javi second post cup final season. We all sort of felt that something wasn't right. Maybe the answer, perhaps in hindsight, wasn't to get rid of the manager, but we all definitely felt something wasn't right at the start of that season. I don't look at these performances and feeling around the club at the moment and go, oh, something's not right. I definitely feel that there's massively room for improvement, and there's been a lot of errors, and there's been a lot of worrying signs in isolation in our performances. But the whole of it, the whole piece together, doesn't feel out of control or abject. It doesn't feel like the players have given up. It all sort of feels like they're trying their best. Their best may proved to be not good enough, but it feels like to me that they're kind of heading, you know, that they're on the right track, they're doing their best, and, you know, hopefully Gino will take that into account. But ultimately, as I said, I think if we get battered against Leeds on Saturday, then I think I'll be, you know, sitting by my phone on Sunday morning waiting for the tweet to come through.
I think we need to be careful about that looking forward. If we get battered in the next game, if this happens, if that happens, I think what was really interesting is looking at Watford's body of work so far. You shared it, Dave. I can't remember. It was one of the broadcasters that was at the game at Vicarage Road, and he was quite effusive about the game itself. He alluded to what you said, Adam. It was energetic, full of incident. And as someone who was watching it a lot more impartially than any of us three, he said Watford are going to be all right. He said they're certainly not as bad as some Watford fans are suggesting. Hold my hand up to that. And he, completely neutral, completely impartial, saw enough in that performance to suggest that Watford had enough about them.
But do you know what my issue with that is, Mike? You know, listening to the various pundits and, you know, radio presenters, TV presenters out there reading The Athletic and stuff, talking to my colleagues. Basically, I've heard everyone say they're going to be all right about every team in the relegation battle, apart from Norwich. The consensus is that Norwich are not going to be okay. You worry for Norwich, yeah. But not everyone's going to be all right. Who's not going to be all right? If we are.
My point is, I think sometimes we probably, and I'm probably talking to myself here, giving myself a bit of a ticking off, take a step back and actually look at the league, which is actually shaping up in a really interesting way, isn't it? There's some teams that are struggling, one of which we're playing on Saturday. They haven't won yet this season. And I think there's five or six teams who haven't won yet this season. And, you know, that could be for a whole host of reasons. But we're actually in mid-table-ish. Some good performances, some not so good, some pretty naff. But for a team that's just been promoted, I think it's not necessarily a terrible record, is it? And I think it's very, very difficult for us as Watford fans. As I said at the top, we've seen it. We understand what happens. We're almost programmed to expect it. And we sort of look with trepidation to the next game. If we get battered in the next game, then this is going to happen. And perhaps we need to be more confident as supporters that this might just work out.
I just wanted to mention a few people that have asked about this subject, and there were a fair few. Ryan South, Oliver Ornitz on Twitter, Richard Steeden had mentioned about, you know, Cristiano Giretta's tweets. I'll come on to a question from Andrew Mitchell in a moment, perhaps when we wrap up this section. But a couple of the elements in the piece that I've written looks at maybe how they will be guided by that season, that 2019-20 season, when perhaps with hindsight, although things weren't quite right after the cup final going into the beginning of that season, maybe it was maybe too soon to get rid of Javi, and they should have maybe shown a little bit more faith with him. Maybe they did make a mistake in bringing Kike Sanchez Flores back in the first place and then giving him too much time, especially going into an international break. You know, he actually bought himself a little bit more time by winning a game against Norwich, and then subsequent to that there was defeats against Burnley and Southampton, but it just wasn't working. But one thing that I think has changed, which we haven't really ever seen, came under Sissoko last season. And we've talked about it a lot, but I think it does sort of reflect one of the things that Cristiano Giretta actually uses quite a lot on his social media. He uses the hashtag never give up. And last season, there was that opportunity, that tipping point where things were not going in the right direction for Sissoko. After 9 games, which is not a bad amount of games for some Watford head coaches to have had in charge. And they actually decided, no, come on, let's knuckle down and let's work at this. Let's get all the senior players together and let's work at it. Let's not fracture. Let's try and rebuild. Let's get a plaster cast over it and try and see if we can manage this situation. So it will be very, very interesting indeed to see how it pans out over the next couple of weeks. Because what is also part of this is the run that we have after the international break. We face the current top 5 in our next 8 games, and the other 3 games are Southampton, Leicester and Arsenal. Arsenal and Leicester, you would expect to rise up the table and be part of the top half anyway. Yes, Southampton are going to be in the mix with us, potentially, so you'd have to be picking up some points in that. But realistically, it might only be, you know, 1 game out of that next 8, all the way up until December, that you've realistically got a chance of actually picking some points up in. So do you try and chance your arm and try and get a new manager bounce? You know, this is all sort of relying on the fact that maybe things aren't going to go to plan at Leeds. But how do you think this is going to pan out? And do you feel that there is a change in the way that they want to manage changing head coaches ultimately?
I think one thing that we forget about the current situation and about Sissoko is how incredibly inexperienced he still is. I wonder whether that plays into their thinking at all, in terms of we've given this guy a chance. It's his first big job, really, in football. He was at Dinamo Tbilisi before, which is, you know, obviously not on the same level as managing a Premier League team. We need to help him. If we believe in him, if we see something in him, we need to help him, we need to support him, we need to, you know, back this guy. There's no use taking a punt on him and getting rid of him at the first sign of trouble. He's in his career so far, he's only, according to Wikipedia, which I think is referenced from a reliable source, he's only managed 46 games in his whole career. He's only lost 13 of those 46 games. So he's actually not got experience at the thing that he is going to be doing this season, just by definition of being where we are, and that's losing games. He's not used to losing games and having runs of games where he loses consistently. And that's something you need to learn about, how you deal with it. How do you keep the mentality of the dressing room up? How do you keep your own head? How do you, how do you steer through the troubled waters and say, this is, okay, we lost to Man City, we lost to Chelsea, we lost to Man United, but we need to keep going. We're doing the right things. Like, he's not been in that situation much before. Obviously, he can draw from his experience as a player. He might have, someone like Rafa Benitez who he could lean on, or other coaches or influences in his life. But I do think on the one hand, it's easy to sort of look at his inexperience and go, oh, that is a negative thing, and say, oh, the bloke is so inexperienced, he's not cut out for it at this level. But on the other hand, we've got to maybe give him patience because of it.
Because the one thing he has got is experience, albeit short term, but that's all you get really at Watford at the moment, is experience with this team of players. And he turned them round last year. He had an impact when he came in. He's tasted success at Vicarage Road. So he has got, it does look like the players are playing for him. Adam, as you said continually, really, and I think it's right to say so, that the players look like they are playing for Watford and for Sissoko. They look happy, they look confident, they look committed. And I think you have to give Sissoko and his team credit for that. Now, we've talked about the games that are coming up and whether a new manager might give us a new manager bounce. But the reality is, look, we face Liverpool, Everton, Arsenal, Man United, Leicester, Chelsea, Man City. Who is going to come in and do a better job than Sissoko against those teams? The reality is there aren't many managers that you would put any money on to come in and deliver results against them. The chances are whoever comes in I know we have a history of unearthing decent results against the top six every season. We do turn one or two in. But so if we change, is the expectation with this run of games coming, is the expectation that we get 3 more points, 6 more points, 9 more points? Because I think that's completely unrealistic looking at those fixtures. It may be that we do, but in reality, if we're looking for a new manager to come in and have an immediate impact and sort of steady the ship, if indeed it does need steadying at this early stage, is it realistic to expect it with that coming round the corner?
It's not. And whoever it is, if that happens, again, I know we're talking about a lot of hypothetical situations today. We might win on Saturday and this is all moot point. Hopefully that's the case.
Absolutely.
But, you know, look on their past record, they've got just as many wrong as they have right, really. And, you know, there's no... Are there people out there that could get a better tune out of this Watford squad and maybe have a better chance of getting points against the bigger teams than Cisco? I would say probably yes. In the world of football, obviously yes. But you can't have your pick. You can't just go and cherry pick whoever you want. You have to be realistic. Who's going to come to Watford? Look at the sort of people they've appointed in recent years. It's going to be a gamble, whoever it is. It is not going to be somebody at the top level with a proven track record, you wouldn't think. So it could go well. It might not go well. It's probably going to be somebody with a similar sort of CV, kind of from the same sort of place as Cisco. So we may as well stick with it, I suppose, is what I'm saying, because I think you're right. It would be very hard to rip the script up from this point and see how it goes. But we just know that it might happen. We can't rule it out.
And there are huge question marks, I think, about how... I just go back to how Watford played in that game against Newcastle. I thought there was the pattern of play and just the way they were set up looked dodgy to me. And ultimately that lies with the head coach. So it's 50-50, isn't it, at the moment? But it's, as always with Watford, as always with the managerial situation, it's fascinating and could change almost at any given time, couldn't it?
Adam, you obviously talk to Cisco on a regular basis, you know, press conferences, before and after matches, you're at every game, you can observe him. Do you think how do you think he's doing in himself? Do you get the impression that he's happy, that he's confident, that he's learning?
I think the last word that you use there, learning, is exactly what he has been doing on the job. But we have to also give him the respect that he deserves, that it's not like you or I going in there. Yes, he's inexperienced and, you know, spoken about his time in Dynamo Tbilisi and all that sort of stuff. But he has been in big situations. He has big, you know, he's been in big atmospheres. It's how much of a departure that is to be able to get your point across when you need to in big situations in when you are the head coach rather than being a player. And I think that is still maybe something that he's learning to do, especially in his second language, which is not going to be easy. But I think that the players around him see that he's a good human being. Also, and it's a word that he uses a lot, he's humble. So it's not like he's giving them these orders and sort of blindly going, do this, do this, do this, do this. And they're all looking around and going, is he mad? That's completely the wrong thing to do. There is seemingly a good sort of to and fro with all of the players. There's a good to and fro with Tom Cleverley. So there seems to be a good connection with what is going on in the dressing room. Tom Cleverley's spoken about that before. So I think there are elements in how he is learning on the job and moving forward in the role that are positive. So it's almost like, yeah, let's just see how this pans out, because there is a loyalty with some of the players. And I think that is something to build on rather than sort of go, look, that, you know, Downing tools, he's lost the dressing room and all that sort of stuff, all the cliches. Remember, a lot of those big characters that potentially might have been able to go upstairs and go, yeah, no, he's not the right man. Not saying that definitely happened, but there will have been conversations here and there, or there will have been inclinations from senior players in the past. I don't think that's necessarily happening now. And we will only be able to see what happens after the game at Leeds United this weekend. And I'll be brutally honest, I've got my fingers crossed for him. I hope that it goes well, because it would be nice, wouldn't it, as Watford fans, to be able to just sort of go, yeah, he's still in charge. Yeah, we're having a rough patch, but he's still in charge. Deal with it. You know, fair enough. It happens at other clubs.
Can you at least pick out an example of somebody that they persisted with and they ended up staying up?
Well, yes, there is that point. But then you know, immediately in the minds of the hierarchy will be, well, we got it wrong the last time, so let's try something different. You know, let's give it a go. And I suppose that touches on that point that I was going to mention from Andrew Mitchell, talking about expectation and entitlement. And I know, Mike, you mentioned the word entitlement earlier on, but I mean, I finish off the piece and hopefully people will go off and read it. That let's reset a little bit and remember that it might actually serve us well to be the ones that are the underdogs, to be fighting against these bigger clubs. You know, the egos got out of control in 2019-20 and they thought that they belonged and it was going to work itself out. It's good now to be able to go, come on, let's really fight for this. Because there was a little bit of a sense that we might just be able to turn up having beaten Norwich against Newcastle and do exactly the same thing. And that didn't happen. So it's a good little reality check that. And, you know, go to Leeds, try and shut up shop, try and silence the crowd. And then let's see if we can hit them on the break, get in space behind and, you know, let's see what we can do. So let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. If you want to read the article, the latest article and all the other writing that I've done on Watford over the last few months and years, you can go to theathletic.com/rookeryend. And by listening to From the Rookery End, you get a discount of 33%, which gives you a subscription, new subscription for about £3.33 a month, which is well, well worth it. Not just for my writing, but for all the other writing that you get on The Athletic. So it'd be great to have you on board.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
So we've talked about the head coach. We're going to look ahead with Phil Hay to Leeds a little bit later on in the show. And we're going to reflect with a little bit of a selection challenge on Newcastle in a moment's time. But Dave, you've got something for us, have you?
Yeah, well, look, I know we want to move on. We want to look forward and be optimistic. But Mike, you were so, so downbeat, even by your standards, in the last podcast, immediately after the Newcastle game. Perhaps not without good reason, but I thought I would just have a little listen this week to the counterpart podcast for Newcastle that we have at The Athletic, Pod on the Tyne. Very good podcast, actually, that one. And I just thought I'd see what they thought about the game and how they were feeling about stuff. And sometimes it's interesting just to hear what other clubs are feeling about themselves. And maybe, just maybe, this might just make you feel a little bit better about our lot in the world.
I couldn't believe that we hadn't won the game. And it was when we were 1-0 up, it genuinely looked like there was only one team going to win it. And we should have been 4-0 up by half time. And when it went to 1-1... I just thought, it's so typical of us, but I just couldn't believe that we had done it again. It's almost like they never learned from the mistakes, you know? But the sucker punch, Chris, came again from a poorly defended set piece. At the minute, it kind of feels like every time Newcastle face a corner, that something dangerous is going to happen. And of course, there was a flick on and then Saar pulled away at the back post and nodded at home. This keeps happening, doesn't it? They don't look particularly organised back there.
Well, they keep conceding sloppy goals. In Newcastle's games this season, their matches average 3.5 goals per game across both teams, but Newcastle are only scoring 1.2 of those. They're conceding 2.3 themselves per game. And that is the problem at the moment.
But who cares about stats when you have to deal with Jacob Murphy going through one-on-one with a goalkeeper in the last few minutes of the game to seal all 3 points? And let's be honest,
better, you know?
John Anderson is all of us, isn't he, in this situation?
Can he play a colleague through? It's Jacob Murphy released. Murphy one-on-one. Jacob Murphy to win it.
Oh, the frustration. Amazing.
Oh, dear.
So if they can laugh about their plight, so can we, eh?
You know, let's dig into it a little bit in terms of the lineup that we saw against Newcastle. We're just going to go through it. What is it exactly that should be changed? Dave, go on. You look after that back five, if you can.
Yeah, it is notable that there has been a lot of chopping and changing so far this season. Obviously, there was the unchanged lineup from the win to Norwich to Newcastle, but events transpired during that game, which meant the team was very different at the end of the game to the one that started. And then again, that's kind of thrown up all these questions again. I wouldn't change the goalkeeper. I saw Backman after the game, actually. He was swimming against the tide, making his way down Occupation Road as everyone was getting away from the stadium, and he was kind of sheepishly sort of saying hello to people and stuff. No sign of a limp, though, so I don't really know if that knee, how bad that knee is. But I wouldn't change it. I think Foster could have, by his own admission, could have done better for that goal, but he made a lot of good saves in the game, kept us in it, really, right to the end. So I'd keep Ben. I'd keep Ben Foster there for now. Wouldn't change the fullbacks. I don't know what's going on with Kiko. He went off again after an hour. Is that sort of the plan at the moment? Is he only got an hour in his legs at the moment, or is it just another injury again?
That's what Munoz said after the game, that, you know, he's not at the moment able to get through a whole game, which is frustrating. And we have seen that in the past, that he likes all that tape on his legs, and, you know, he might just be a little bit, maybe a little bit, you know, might take a little bit longer than, say, someone else who's willing to sort of run through brick walls. But that's, you know, each to their own. Different players, you know, take different paths. But that is the situation with him at the moment. But hopefully, you know, after the international break, yeah, he'll be fine to be able to sort of kick through a whole 90 minutes. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm not changing the fullbacks. Danny Rose was good again, I thought, in the main. His improvement continues as he tries to get back to his old self. The centre-backs have been the topic of conversation, haven't they, really, this season, even before the season started. Cathcart's come in for the last few games. We won at Norwich, so it was easy to overlook maybe some of the hairy moments that he had in that game. But then watching those highlights back, watching the game, being there, and then watching the highlights back, Cathcart did stand out. I think he got pulled out of position a few times. He obviously made that, which can happen. He made a bad back pass. It's not characteristic of him, but it wasn't a good moment for him. He did recover and kind of put off Sam Maximan, which meant that the pass was behind Longstaff, which kind of helped. But there were a few moments where I looked at that and thought, oh, okay, yeah, maybe he shouldn't be starting, to be honest with you, with some of the people we've got. And, you know, the big question mark is Sierra wasn't on the bench again. Why is that? We still don't have a, you know, we've got a vague sort of response, you know, answer from Cisco about sort of technical decisions and this sort of thing. But I'd love get to the bottom of it. But yeah, obviously he doesn't feel he's good enough at the moment. Yeah. But I was just, in response to a question on our WhatsApp group the other day, when we were talking about the centre-backs and we were saying, could we change it? And what's the best mix? And what are they there to do? What are their strengths and weaknesses? I think it was Jordy who said, oh, well, you know, we obviously want to play out from the back, but we haven't got any centre-backs who are capable of doing that. So I thought I'd just have a bit of a look at the stats. And this is a small sample size, sort of quite brief look at the stats just from this season. So, you know, you can't always read too much into it over such a small amount of games, but it was quite interesting nonetheless to look at the stats so far. Sierra is streets ahead in terms of his pass completion. He's got a 96.2 pass completion rate this season. Obviously, he's played fewer minutes than Troost Ekong and Cathcart, so you take that into account, but he's still miles ahead of the other two. Cathcart is down at 81%. Troost Ekong's at 87.7%. If you delve into it further and you look at the long passes that they've attempted, so that's something that's important for switching the play out to Kiko or out to Sarr or out to the left-hand side, and we do try and go long to the front players as well sometimes, then you really do start to get, you know, another difference. Cathcart's way down at 67.4% at completion at his long passes. Serrato's completed 28 out of 29 long passes that he's attempted in the matches he's played this season. Troost Ekong's about 76%, so he's somewhere in between the two. But just from that small sample size and from our eyes and what we've seen of him playing when he has played, we know Sierra is more comfortable on the ball. He's better at bringing it out from the back than the others. So I would have him in there for that reason. And I don't think he's a bad defender either. Troost Ekong, as we've talked about, is not always the most composed and doesn't always make the right choices, although his stats were a bit higher than I thought they would be. But he's a good defender and he's clearly a big character. He's a leader. I've got a lot of time for him. So I'd have him in there. I'd have him with Sierra. I think that is our best partnership. So I would like to see Sierra back in against Leeds. You know, we've got to take into account the opposition as well. Leeds are a team full of movement, full of pressing. They're going to press us relentlessly. They're also going to be moving around. Players are going to be swapping positions. They're going to be all over us. So it could be a difficult afternoon for Cathcart in that respect. And we don't want Troost Ekong to be the lead ball-playing defender in that game either. So I'd put Sierra back in for that reason.
I think a lot of people are still confused, and I don't think we've quite got to the bottom of exactly why Sierra has been sort of ostracised in the way that he has been. But then again, you know, it might be simply down to that sort of experience factor and the fact that Ben Foster came in, Cathcart came in, you know, it was sort of joining up with his good mate Tom Cleverley as well. So it's like, you know, let's try and get an experienced set of players in the starting lineup and see how that goes.
Do you know one more thing quickly before we move on is, again, I think Jordy pointed this out, and I didn't really think about it until then. We don't have a left-footed centre-back. when your strength is on the right-hand side and you want to get those balls out to the right-hand side, it's a lot easier to do that with your, you know, naturally without moving your body shape or taking an extra touch if you're left-footed. Which I'll be wondering, it would be interesting to know whether the recruitment team are, you know, that's something they think about. I've done podcasts on, you know, with Michael Cox and some of our data guys specifically about the notion of how important left foot centre backs are. You know, Laporte, when he signed for Man City, all of a sudden Pep Guardiola was talking about how he's completely changed the way we play because we can give it to him, he can open his body out, he can create different angles. And again, if we're going to try and play out from the back and we're going to be that sort of team going forward, something to think about as well.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned that, and hopefully that sort of is a decent response to the questions that we got from John Moran in the zone as well, and Lee Jackson as well, who suggested that maybe just Xisco Munoz is cutting off his nose to spite his face by not selecting Sierra. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on Saturday at Elland Road. Right, I'm going to take charge of the midfield. I think there's sort of quite a few ways to look at this one, but I don't think that there is much wrong with the players that have been selected so far. I think that there has been subtle changes recently, changing it from having someone sitting completely on their own with two advanced sort of number eights, so a six and then two eights. I think it is now more two sixes and then three in front, so it's more of a 4-2-3-1, and Moussa Sissoko seems to have been given that role to pick up the ball from the back. I don't necessarily know if that particularly suited to his way of playing. Maybe it turns a screw a little bit on him, and maybe he's more comfortable picking up that first pass and then carrying the ball over the halfway line. But I think what they have now got is a clear alternative to Tom Cleverley in Ozan Toufan. I think that having Moussa Sissoko there and Juraj Kutska as a two in midfield in front of a back four adds great protection. And then I think if it is Tom Cleverley, his energy is there. And I think just looking back to that Newcastle game, the fact that he got a massive whack in the face, that literally just, it knocked him sideways. And it meant that Watford's rhythm in that first half, it always comes from Tom Cleverley, you know, when he's been playing. And he really changed the dynamic against Norwich. And I think Watford lost that a bit after he got that boot. If it's not working with Tom Cleverley as your more advanced midfielder, which is effectively, you know, a number 10, play Ozan Toufan and see what he's doing, because he can certainly carry the ball forward. It doesn't work with him sitting. And we saw against Newcastle when the order of the subs was a little bit higgledy-piggledy. I mentioned it in the last piece that I did. He's not a sitter. He's one that wants to carry the ball and go over the halfway line and try and feed attackers. So, yeah, I would still go with Sissoko, Juraj Kutska, and either Tom Cleverley or Ozan Toufan. And then I might nick one off you, Mike, if you don't mind, that, yeah, I wouldn't mind just having João Pedro available to play that number 10 role or that advanced number 8 role as and when I need him. But then, just because you're on, Dave, I am going to mention Imran Lusa, because I would like to see him used in a game when, you know, there is sort of a feeling that we need to get on the ball. We need to hold the ball more and control the sort of the tempo of the game. And I'd like to see him used a little bit more as an alternative within games. Not, you know, I think he can do a job. Maybe when the pace of the game is sort of dissipated a little bit. So maybe he could be a first change for maybe Juraj Kutska. And then maybe he could sit and start to come and get the ball. But as it stands for Leeds, I've not really changed anything aside from maybe Toufan coming in for Cleverley, but I would still have Tom Cleverley in there because I love his energy, I love his leadership. Mike, take it away. You got your front three.
Well, you'll be pleased to know, lads, that I agree with both of you. So congratulations, you have the Mike Parkin seal of approval, and it leads us on to the attack, doesn't it? Where he's got more questions to answer, and it's slightly frustrating because it felt like we had one of those questions answered, didn't it? When we thought Joshua King had popped up with that late winner. And what I loved about that, I've been banging the drum for King for a little bit over the last couple of weeks, and I stand by that. I think the whole way he operates as that number nine down the middle, he looks the part to me. And I loved his celebration on Saturday when he thought he'd scored. That just enormous release, that just intense explosion of delight, not just in the stands, but from Joshua King and his teammates.
You see the way he looked when it got ruled out? When he saw when he saw the ref go to VAR, he just sort of rolled his eyes, looked at heaven and thought, oh, what more can I do?
And that speaks to what we've been talking about him, doesn't it? That if he can get lift off, I think he could be a really, really important player for Watford. I think a lot of the thing we talk about is Premier League know-how and yada, yada, yada. He's got it. He's been around the block. He's had good times. He's had bad times. And if we can get him on an upward curve, I think he could be a really, really useful addition. The problem being, of course, he hasn't scored yet. And the longer that goes on, the more questions will be asked from the management team, from the owners who are presumably watching and how he's using these various players. And his confidence as well, of course, will change as a result. And we've talked about the run of games that are coming up. Chances are going to be at a premium, aren't they, against Manchester City, against Manchester United, against Chelsea. So if you're low on confidence going into those games, having not picked up goals against the lesser teams, with all due respect to those guys, then we've got a question to ask. So it's about how we manage the goal scoring, isn't it? And it's how you manage someone like Joshua King, who needs that goal, but so far hasn't got it. And the impact that has on his teammates up there. So Ismaïla Sarr and Emmanuel Dennis are the other two in possession at the top. And what we're seeing is them sort of swap positions a little bit. They drift, don't they, to try and catch the opposition out. And some would say that that's not utilising Ismaïla Sarr in the best possible way. I made the point on Saturday, and it still rankles. I checked, and it was just 29, 30 minutes when Matt Ritchie got booked for effectively surrendering and throwing his hands up and saying, I can't deal with Ismaïla Sarr. We didn't get him in the game against him at all, did we? So that's another question that needs to be answered, because he's our best player and we're not utilising him correctly at the moment. So that needs to be sorted out. But
I think that's a bit of an overstatement. Yeah, we didn't use him enough maybe in that game. But
We didn't use him enough though, Dave. On the whole, we are.
But we maybe need to take into account the teams know we're going to do that. So they may try their game plan. Part of their game plan might be to stop us getting the ball to him.
Absolutely. And that is undoubtedly, if you are playing Watford, you stop Ismaïla Sarr. Absolutely. But he's that good, that quick, that talented, that he's too good for opposition defenders. Yeah. He was up, he was one-to-one with Matt Ritchie, and we saw with our own eyes what he thought of that matchup. He gave up. So we then had an hour to work out how all we needed to do was get him booked. So all you need to do is go past him once, and the chances are there's going to either be a chance or another yellow card and he's off. And we're just not doing that. Yes, he scored four goals, one against Newcastle, who, as you just played out in that podcast, Dave, they're an absolute mess. And the other team, he scored two against Norwich and they're relegated. So we have to be honest about this. We're not getting the best out of him. And I actually thought Emmanuel Dennis probably didn't have his best game against Newcastle either. He sort of looked a little bit out of sorts, where previously I think he's been a bright spot up there. So, Adam, you mentioned João Pedro coming on. I thought that was incredible. I thought he just gave Watford a whole new dimension and a new sort of lease of life when he came on. He reminded us who he is, really, because we haven't seen him all season. Brave, fearless, strong, skillful, not afraid to drive on, get into the box, get into dangerous areas, which I think, to be honest, we haven't done enough. Can we get João Pedro into the game? I think probably those front three, Dennis, King and Sarr, deserve another shot at it against Leeds. I think it's a tantalising game. Could go either way for a whole host of reasons. But I think they deserve a shot at it, because I think if they click, they could be absolutely lethal. And if we get people like Firmino and Danny Rose really, really confident, really bombing on, and get that midfield sorted, if we do start with Toufan playing more on the front foot, I think it will play into the hands of those guys and ask more questions of defenders and allow us to utilise them better. But I do think we're coming to a time where we're going to have to make a tough call, because we're not scoring enough goals and there are people knocking on the door. Cucho Hernandez didn't get a game for the first time on Saturday. He didn't feature. He'll be gagging to get back involved, and he can ask questions of defenders. He's fleet of foot, isn't he, and likes driving on and looks like he's got something to offer. So for me, much like you guys, I'm keeping it as you were, but I think we're on the cusp of potentially having to change it.
So we've sorted it out and we've changed
only Craig Cathcart. So that's basically job done. Well, we'll see what happens against Leeds. But let's switch our focus to Leeds, because it was great sort of getting the Newcastle perspective. Phil Hay is the wonderful Leeds correspondent for The Athletic. And let's just find out from him first the reasons that he thinks this has been an underwhelming start for Leeds this campaign.
A few factors are contributing to Leeds' start, and it should be said first of all that they do have selection problems between injuries and the suspension to Pascal Struijk for that tackle that injured Liverpool's Harvey Elliott. They are below full strength, and that is making a difference not only to the starting lineup but also to the bench. Bielsa does use a very small squad in comparison to a lot of other Premier League clubs, and for that reason absentees are going to bite more. So that has definitely been a problem. But I think beyond that, it seems pretty clear to me that with a couple of exceptions, a lot of the players are a little or a distance below the level that they peaked at last season when Leeds finished ninth, and I do feel that has affected the form. I think as well they failed to take big chances at key moments in games, both against Newcastle, but particularly against West Ham on Saturday when Matthias Klik had that huge opportunity in the second half when Leeds were 1-0 up, missed it, and West Ham were back in the game in no time. It would be a slightly unfair reflection of the game, though, not to say that West Ham looked stronger towards the end and to my mind looked like they were going to win the game from 1-1 onwards. And that is an issue, I feel, that previously you did fancy Leeds to win any game that they were in. You always felt that they had a chance. I feel like this season so far they've looked an awful lot more vulnerable, and they've looked more inclined to lose games than to win them. So they do definitely need to get back to form. They do definitely need to hit their peak, which they haven't been at yet. And to an extent, I think they are suffering from the failure to sign a central midfielder in the summer, which was a position which really did need filling. So between, you know, all of this and a drop in their attacking stats, they're not quite where they should be. But I think the feeling around Elland Road is that they still will be fine. Needless to say, though, this is a very, very big game on Saturday.
So there is a little bit of that second season syndrome that Leeds are having to deal with at the moment. But having not won a game, they will be licking their lips with the visit of Watford. Are they seeing this as their chance to get 3 points on the board for the first time this season?
The fixtures haven't been overly kind to Leeds in the early part of the season. They've not been horrendous either, but they have played Manchester United, Liverpool, Everton and West Ham in the first six games. And they were always going to be difficult. It was never going to be easy to take points from those fixtures. I think Newcastle away looked on paper like a very, very winnable game, not least because of the dissent that's been shown to Steve Bruce up there and the sort of feeling of mutiny around St James's Park. And that in the end did feel like 2 points dropped, even though Newcastle, you know, looked like they might nick it at one point in the second half. The most disappointing performance for me would be Burnley away. I think that is where we all expected Leeds to go and turn up and be strong and to dominate. And in the end, it seemed to be Burnley who really had the measure of that game until Leeds equalised with 4 minutes to go. But what's coming up next, I think, is the period that is going to decide whether this will ultimately be a comfortable season for Leeds or whether there's going to be a fair amount of discomfort as it goes on. Watford on Saturday, obviously, then Southampton, then Wolves and Norwich away, who are yet to pick up a point and already look like they're in serious trouble. This period, I feel, has to yield 6 points, if not nine. And I think Watford at home with a crowd, full house at Elland Road, a definite fixture to target. Without any doubt, Leeds need to take something from it. And I felt the crowd were very patient with them against West Ham, even after the late winner from Mikel Antonio. But I don't think the same patience will be there if it goes wrong against Watford. The really positive aspect of Saturday, though, despite the result to West Ham, was the first half performance. I thought that looked like Bielsa ball in full flow, certainly in the best periods of it. It was difficult for West Ham to cope with. They found the variation of Leeds' positioning, the movement and the rapid exchanges of the ball hard to manage. It didn't run for 90 minutes, and I think that is now the key for Bielsa, that he needs a complete performance. But I do think there is optimism there that it will come this weekend.
So that's Phil Hay from a Leeds perspective. And don't forget, you can read all of his work, which is brilliant, on a whole range of topics. But he is much loved up at Elland Road, and he is a great bloke as well. You can read him on The Athletic. You can subscribe by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend, and you can get that discount if you're a new subscriber at 33% off at the moment. But let's just finish with a little bit of a rallying cry. They don't do it enough, I don't think, football clubs. They don't allow fans into dressing rooms. They need to start doing this. Maybe they need to start doing it on video. You know,
Not just, well, no,
I think Mike, get Mike in, right? So I'm going to give you both the opportunity just to end this episode. The players have been out for their warm-up. They've come back in. You know, there's the whiff of Raljex in the air. You know, they're all stood round in a circle, and they've invited you into the dressing room, Mike. And Dave, I'll give you a chance to add a little bit before they go out. But Mike, what are you saying to the players? You know, with Sierra back in the side, ahead of running out at a cauldron atmosphere at Elland Road.
Do not, my boys, fear the sound of Elland Road, for that is the sound. It's an empty Pyrrhic noise. It is the sound not of confidence, it's the sound of fear. These are supporters trying to rise to rouse a team that haven't won all season. They thought they were going to be up there challenging for Europe. They're down there with the dead men, and we can make it even worse for them. They fluff their lines every time they've stepped out on the pitch, and that crowd will get very, very quiet very, very quickly if we play the way we know we can. Leeds are there to be got at, basically. Phil said it there. There won't be the patience against Watford that there has been in some of the earlier games, certainly not the other home games. If we can get out there and make a good start, a solid start even, it doesn't even need to be spectacular. Stop them running over us. And we've talked about it. We've talked about where the quality is in this side. We know it's there. They're wobbly. Let's push them over. Let's get another 3 points. Let Adam enjoy his holiday. And Cisco can turn his phone off without having to turn it on and getting a load of answer phone messages that he doesn't want to hear.
Dave, anything to add?
I would address the team a few days earlier, actually. I'm going to take it back a few days. This is on Thursday, as the day this podcast goes out. I'm hoping that Cisco has sat them all down and made them sit through the matches that Leeds played against Manchester United earlier in the season, against Liverpool earlier in the season, against Manchester United and Liverpool last season when they conceded lots of goals to both those sides. Those are just two examples. But basically, teams that have quick attacks and that can soak up pressure, like those two can damage Leeds. Now, we may not be brilliant at soaking up pressure. That's where we're going to have to step up a bit, boys. But we have got the players to harm and to damage Leeds United. We've got pace, and we need to move the ball quickly to our in the transitions. When Leeds lose the ball, they're open. The way they play, they leave gaps all over the place. In the first sort of 10 minutes against Liverpool, it was like watching the last 5 minutes of the game we played against Newcastle. The game was completely stretched. That will be the case on Saturday, and their confidence will be fragile. They've got great, you know, they've got very good players in a lot of areas of the pitch. Rafinha is basically their, you know, their version of Ismail Assar. He is an excellent player that will probably move on from them come the summer. So we've got to be wary of the weapons that they have, but let's not forget that we can do damage to this team. They're going to be difficult, they're going to harass us, they're going to be buzzing all around us, they're going to be in our faces. We had a sort of similar experience at Brighton, but these guys are even more aggressive. So be prepared for that. But when we get the ball, break quickly, break decisively, and we can do them.
And if all else fails, we'll do what we did at the Millennium Stadium, which is let off loads of fireworks before kickoff and scare the living daylights out of them. Check out that clip if you haven't seen it. I can't remember which Leeds player it is, but all the fireworks go off and someone jumps, don't they? They look very nervous about the fireworks in that playoff final. So if all else fails, fireworks it is.
Try and win it in the tunnel. That's what it's all about. That's what it is against Leeds. Well, look, fingers crossed, gents. Let's hope it goes to plan. I'm looking forward to being at Elland Road and, soaking up that atmosphere. And hopefully, Watford can just silence the crowd and then kick on. And at the very least, come away with a point from the game and head into the international break with some positivity. We shall see. Dave, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And Mike, fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah, it's going to take more than that, isn't it? Let's be honest. No, <I'm> just... Yeah, look, I think I'm actually really excited about this game. I think this is a massive, massive opportunity. And excited. Look, we're in the Premier League. We're mixing it with the big boys. It's where we want to be. Let's make the most of it. Come on, you Goldens.
We will be reacting to the game at Elland Road on the next podcast. And just to mark your card, next Thursday for our next episode midweek, we have a very, very special guest. So make sure that you tune in for that one. I'm not going to reveal all now, but you will have heard from him and you will enjoy hearing from him once again. Enjoy Elland Road if you're going. If you're there, say hello and I will wave back. And fingers crossed we can come away with 3 points. Take care, everyone. We'll see you soon.
The Athletic.